Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew. I'm here with Henry. Unfortunately, Josh can't be with us today. We will be giving a big season review, I assume on Monday,
Yeah, that's Monday sounds good to me.
Well, we'll be giving a big season review after the Huddersfield game, so make sure you keep your eyes peeled for that. Apologies that we haven't been with you over the last couple of weeks. Been very busy time for all of us. We tried to record one about a week ago, and essentially Wi-Fi and technology and other issues got the better of us. But there you go. I guess that's modern life, isn't it? Henry, what have you made of the last 2 weeks or so? Obviously, the last time we recorded a podcast was just after Arsene Wenger announced his farewell, his departure at the end of the year. So what have you made of the undulating tour since then, the exit of the Europa League, and I guess the beginnings of next season as a lot of younger players have gotten their chance to start and to feature heavily?
Going back to the Madrid tie, prior to the news that Arsene Wenger was going to step down, I wasn't confident that we were going to beat them. But then for some peculiar reason, after he announced that he was resigning, I suddenly felt as if we were going to win. Yeah. For no good footballing reason, just because it would have made a great story.
Yeah, but I thought we were invincible when that happened. I was like, well, there's no way we can lose now. Wenger said he's going.
The second leg was a very tough watch, and I've said it numerous times before. I'm always confident that we'll concede, but I'm always confident that we'll score because it's in Wenger's footballing DNA that we play fantastic attacking football, and for the most part, we do score just about every single game. And Burnley was the perfect day, from the weather to the display itself. Fantastic. The ceremony itself after the game was beautiful as well. And then yesterday, I will admit, I haven't had the chance to rewatch it because, as I said to you beforehand, I had two essays and two presentations in today. But I heard some good things, weirdly, about certain individuals and about our character as well, which is good to hear, I guess, considering the circumstance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I watched yesterday's game, certainly not on a dodgy live stream because the game was most certainly televised in the UK. But it was weird. It wasn't, I mean, it was Arsenal's seventh away loss in the league in a row. Definitely sixth or seventh, something like that. They've obviously not got a point in 2018. So the usual spiel of, oh, Arsenal are terrible away from home, immediately began as soon as the full-time whistle went. And if you looked at the scoreline and the result, you would think exactly that. But this wasn't the disastrous kind of folding capitulation that we have seen away from home in the last few months. There was a degree of character shown. When you're playing with 10 men for 75 minutes against a pretty good Leicester team, they're not a bad team at all.
And they do to equalise as well, in fairness to us.
Yeah, yeah. No, they dragged themselves back into the game and they did have other chances. Mkhitaryan had a couple of opportunities. Aubameyang poked one wide. There was a break where Mkhitaryan should have found Ramsey, but his pass was a couple of inches ahead of him. Leicester were the better team and they had more chances, and Petr Cech had to make quite a few good saves, but this wasn't the typical Arsenal away performance that the scoreline may suggest that it was. Having said that, I'll be gutted if Arsenal don't get at least a point at Huddersfield on Sunday, just because
I mean it'll be good for the new manager to come in without this underlying story of they haven't won an away match in 2018. But no, that's good. I was keeping up on Twitter. I was in a presentation meeting with my group because some of the individuals had neglected to do the work that they had been assigned.
Yes.
I was following through on Twitter and everyone was like, it's a game of basketball. It's not going to stay 1-1. And then lo and behold, we concede a penalty and Jamie Vardy's having a party. So.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a penalty, and I'm fairly sure it was a red card as well. Some people have said it isn't, but I being realistic, it's probably a red card. It's certainly harsh on Leicester if it isn't a red card.
But I heard that Ainsley Maitland-Niles had a good game. Sorry to cut you off there, but I heard he had a good game last night.
He was very inconsistent. He did excellently for the goal, did really well for the goal, and looked really good for large portions. But then he'd have these, he has these moments where he's just uber kind of relaxed.
I know
on the
what
ball,
you mean.
Almost to there was one point where he had the ball at his feet and he kind of just almost forgot what he was doing because he was so relaxed. The Leicester player kind of got a foot in, poked it, and then they won a throw in. And it didn't lead to anything. It wasn't a major issue, but it was just kind of an instance of where his kind of his composure leads to complacency. And then he got absolutely skinned for the penalty. He got turned inside out by Damari Gray, which was pretty disappointing. But I think for the most part, he was pretty good. Inconsistent, but not bad. I thought Alex Iwobi was all right. I thought Mkhitaryan was good.
He had to play
good
on the left in the end, didn't he? Because we took Welbeck off. He was playing through the middle originally.
He kind of played in this... Him and Mkhitaryan kind of both played in these kind of half-wide, half-central roles. They were a bit... It was very free-flowing, very weird. It was kind of like a
four... Well, almost two strikers up top, in a way, with Welbeck and Aubameyang to start off.
To start off, it was Iwobi centrally and Welbeck on the left. And then once Welbeck went off, it was kind of like a 4-2-2-1.
I see.
With Xhaka and Ramsey sitting a little deeper, and then Iwobi and Mkhitaryan in these kind of weird free-roaming roles. I thought those two played quite well, actually. Aubameyang looked excellent. Again, his movement off the ball is just phenomenal.
Mm.
But it's just one of those games. Disappointing, but one of those games. I think, back to the Atletico game, for me, it was actually a performance that wasn't that bad between the penalty boxes. I mean it's typical Arsenal. It was poor delivery, as primarily from Bellerin and Monreal, poor finishing, and then poor defending on one crucial part just before half time as well. And I didn't quite see it as a terrible Arsenal performance. They were just a little bit unlucky, I think.
Possibly. I mean, the thing that surprised me upon review of that game was how, I understand last 10-15 minutes of the game you're going gung-ho, but it seemed as though for large parts of the game we weren't able to string any sort of passing.
No, especially the
second
half. Any
sort of passes together. It was very weird. But there have, weirdly for me, been some positives for these past few weeks, excluding the Atletico games. I said recently that I liked the idea of Aubameyang on the wing. I think Alex Iwobi's future home, if you will, is in central midfield. I think his qualities translate much better there than they do out wide. Mavropanos, until yesterday, it seems, was our new saviour. And I actually thought that he did very well with Callum Chambers for the past couple of Premier League games. So I was surprised that Chambers didn't start yesterday and was dropped completely from the team.
I think it was more a point that Rob Holding has hardly played for quite a long time, and Wenger was just desperate to give him some minutes.
Because
he wasn't getting any.
Well,
which
it's
is kind of
time
kind
for
of
us to
enough.
Play the pair of them now at Huddersfield, unless Mustafi is desperate to get on the Germany plane.
It's a weird one. It's kind of this weird kind of period of where Arsenal, they still want to win games because they're competitive and they're winners, and Wenger wants to obviously end on as much as a high as possible, but nobody really cares. So kind
it's a farewell tour, as we said, isn't it?
So the Leicester game was actually a really entertaining game because neither team cared if they lost, but they both wanted to win. So even when Arsenal went down to 10 men, both teams were still really attacking. It was really end-to-end.
I heard it was a game of basketball.
Yeah, it was. It was a really good game to watch because nobody really cared if they lost. It was kind of freeing. It was a little bit odd. And I think that's been the case for the last two or three weeks, really, other than the Madrid games. There's not been much tension in this Arsenal team, for better and worse, which it has allowed some of the younger players to play, but has also meant that the games have kind of fizzled out a little bit, especially in the second half, other than perhaps the Burnley game. What did you make of... I assume you've seen Mesut Ozil's agent's comments from this morning.
I mean, I saw Martin Keown's 20th scathing rant about him. Yeah. But I haven't seen those comments, but I assume that they're not pleasant.
So
I mean, I don't know why the agents want to get involved. I understand. Well, I don't really understand Martin Keogh as an analyst. I understand, but then there's a point whereby you possibly overstep the mark. But I guess you could argue from his perspective, it's passion, passion for the club. It's just, it's tedious. People complain about Arsenal fan TV, and then you get more of a mockery up sometimes in the analyst's booth, if you will. And it's, I mean, because now everyone's a celebrity if they're involved with football in that regard. Yep. They're going to be criticised. And he doesn't help himself. A lot of them don't help themselves. Michael Owen, Savage in particular.
No, I mean, if you get Alexi 5 minutes
as well, doesn't help himself at all.
If you get 5 minutes, go and read this rant by I can't remember his name. I think it's Sorkin, Dr. Something Sorkin or something.
Yeah, I think he's a lawyer.
I think he's got a PhD. I think he's really intelligent. But anyway, it's a and I counted him. It's an 849 word rant against Martin Keown, and he lays into him. I mean, like he says he's jealous of the money that is now being earned by footballers.
Oh, that doesn't help. That really doesn't help his argument at all.
He says he's just saying these things to, or he questions whether he's saying these things to just stay relevant. He talks about how Martin Keown was just a reserve player, never could get in the Arsenal team. He mentions how Keown apparently begged Wenger to play against Leicester when Arsenal won the title for the Invincibles just so he could get a medal. He brings up a time when Keown was a coach at Arsenal, but it didn't last very long and Wenger sent him away. And he says, well, I wonder if that's because he doesn't know anything about football. He calls him, like, he says he's, like, not a big name in comparison to other pundits. I mean, he absolutely destroys him. He completely rips into him. It is hilarious to read. Like, if nobody's seen them, just go and give yourself 5 minutes. Go and Google it and go and find this 849 word rant, because it will really chill
your
day. I mean,
for me, that makes no sense. I mean, from a professional perspective, surely it makes sense for him just to shove everything under the rug, just let it go, let your client go and do the talking. Granted, like Arsenal, Ozil has had an inconsistent season. When he's been good, he's been very good, but for the most part, he's been very quiet, in my opinion. Very good in most games, but you still want more from him. Absolutely. And that's possibly a little harsh, but that's just my personal opinion. But from my perspective, you're just really, you're poking the bear, aren't you, all the time with stuff like that. It's really unnecessary.
It's completely and utterly, like, it's actually, some of the stuff he says is just really shocking and really harsh. Because he's not, that you can tell, I mean, it's not, unfortunately, it's not videoed, so you can't kind of read his body language and stuff. It's just the words that you
read.
How
you perceive it,
Yeah. But though he kind of makes a few good arguments, and some of the stuff he says is actually quite good, but then instead of talking about Ozil, he starts talking about Keown, and then kind of does the typical kind of, I can't remember the Latin word for it, basically where you attack the person, not the argument.
Right.
So instead of attacking, or instead of arguing against what Keown's saying, which may or may not be true depending on your opinion of Ozil, he begins to just lay into Keown himself, completely doesn't acknowledge what Keown says, and just completely rips into Keown. And it's quite funny. Well, it's not even quite funny. It's flipping hilarious. It's really funny. But you can tell he's just lost it at some point. I'm just having a go at him here. He just completely lays into him.
I mean, there's very few pundits that I watch post-game, because obviously we do work associated with the game itself, so we're writing articles, tweets, summaries and whatnot. So very rarely do I actually stay around post-match to watch the game, unless I did when Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher did Monday Night Football. That was a great show. Do they still do that? They must do.
Yeah.
I love it. I might, from next season, obviously, from next season, hopefully I'll be able to watch that more frequently. Although that'll be difficult because I might be in Texas for the academic year. But nonetheless, I'm not looking forward to those 7:30 starts, actually. But whatever. Pundits in general, to me, I look at them and sometimes, I guess it depends on your mood as to whether you think, and to your perception again, as to whether what they're saying makes good sense. I mean, whether you agree with it. Sometimes I can understand the argument of, oh, he's saying things to remain relevant, but Martin Keown's not going to say something to remain relevant. I don't think he would give a monkey's about remaining relevant. He'd probably shout in your face like he did against Ruud van Nistelrooy when also, he missed
a
penalty.
And he brings that up. The agent actually brings that up. He says, look at this guy who, like, what did he say? He says something like bringing the club into disrespect by his behaviour against van Nistelrooy. He says if you did that, you'd kind of shame the club, and which is just incredible. And if there's somebody who I'm not picking a fight with, it's Martin bloody Keown. The guy is massive, and he's got a nasty side to him. Like, I am not picking a fight with Martin Keown.
I can't believe I'm talking about this.
It's incredible. But
I mean, it beats transfer talk from awful websites like Caught Offside. So
it does.
What I
did want to bring up really is not in relation to Keown and Ozil's agent, but in terms of to Keown's comments specifically. Do you agree that Ozil hasn't shown the kind of requisite commitment that is expected, or do you think that because Jermaine Junis, for example, who was working alongside Keown at the same time, made the point that Arsenal haven't put Ozil in a position to perform well, which I agree with. I don't think they have.
And yeah, me too.
He's a certain type of player, and you need to kind of tailor your team towards that. Having said that, is there an element of passion and desire and commitment, all those kind of intangible traits that some players have? You know, the perfect example is somebody like James Milner. You contrast Mesut Ozil to James Milner. Is there an element of disinterest and just not caring about Ozil that is accurate? You know, what Keown says actually is valid and does have a genuine point to make there.
I mean, it's interesting. Again, it's how you read the situation. His injury situations, if you will, certainly don't help his matters. From my perspective, I agree with Jermaine Genus, if that is indeed what he said, in terms of I don't think we've done enough to support him, if you will.
Mm.
The common argument with that, to coincide with that, is you simply have to look at the German national team and how they structured
their
team.
Or when he was at Real Madrid.
I mean, for the German national team, I believe for the last World Cup, he was playing wide on the right-hand side, and he would drift inside. And he obviously, I believe he had Philipp Lahm on playing behind him. But at Arsenal, it's different. He's required, he does drift towards the right-hand side anyway, for the most part, and drift inside. But I certainly agree in terms of the fact, I think we need more players to do the dirty work, because I saw a stat recently and people going, oh, he runs a lot. And I'm like, yes, but it's within the context of the stat you need to look into, not just the fact he runs the most.
Yeah.
Great, he runs the most, but I want to know what kind of context is that? Is it when we have the ball and he's looking for space? Is it him tracking back? There's no context provided for stats like that.
He runs the most because he never stops moving.
Yeah.
Not because he's working the hardest. The two different things.
I mean, because he is our best player, and I do think he is. I mean, you look at just about every single game this season, there are a few moments every single game where you go, okay, nobody else is capable on the field of doing that. No one else can see that. You always want more because he's our star player. We're always going to look at him. It's not a case of when we had Fabregas and everything in Fabregas's final years had to go through Fabregas. Well, actually, to an extent, now I think about it, it does almost. Everything is under Wenger in recent years has been slow and methodical. But for me, it's a case of, to summarise, getting players who are willing to do the dirty work, which is why I made an argument recently that I like the idea of a Xhaka. I think Callum Chambers is going to get a chance, especially considering the fact that Koscielny's out until December now.
Yeah.
Mavropanos and Holding might get a chance as well. But for me, I don't think you sign a holding midfielder in the summer. A holding midfielder for me is our number one priority. I don't think we sign one to replace Xhaka. I think you sign one to partner alongside him to improve the balance within our team. Because for years, I think that's where we've really, really let ourselves down. And that's Arsenal's DNA. But it's a case for me, even by doing that, you'd have a midfield three of, or my midfield three in that regard would be the new acquisition, Xhaka and Ramsey, Ozil to your right, if you will, Aubameyang on your left, Lacazette up front. That's a really good six.
Yeah.
That's a really good six. It's just the case for me, there's almost an expectation for Ozil to do everything, but in a team which is so full of quality like Arsenal are, I don't think there's as much emphasis or there shouldn't be as much pressure on Ozil to do everything because he's our record signing, or he was our record signing. I think we're still trying to push this narrative of he should do what he did against England in the World Cup all those years ago, where he just rips them apart, puts in a great ball. And I think everyone's still looking for that rather than these little intricate passes that no one else is capable of, but they're relatively inconsequential, if you will, in the context of a move. They're not direct. They don't directly contribute to a goal.
Yeah.
So he's a tough one to analyse because he's a player I like, but then I'm guilty of criticising him for supposedly not doing enough or not contributing.
Not caring.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that.
I think for me, his real issue is his inconsistency. Because
yeah, it's weird saying that though, because as you and I just said a moment ago, he is capable of those one or two things every game. But
yeah,
then it
exactly.
just seems to be really, it's really difficult to put your finger on.
But that, and I think his kind of his biggest enemy is the fact that everybody knows what he is capable of. So thereby, when he falls short of that, and it is an extremely high bar. But when he falls short of that high bar, he's going to come under criticism. So he could have a perfectly good performance. But because what he is capable of is so extraordinary, people will still criticise him for simply being a good player. If that kind of makes sense. Because the expectation is so high. He is, especially a few years ago, when really he was Arsenal's only world-class player alongside Alexis Sanchez, certainly world-class attacker. And he was playing with lots of players who didn't offer him that type of movement or that type of speed or that type of ingenuity that he required, like with the German national team, like you say.
Yeah.
The expectation was on him to do everything. And no player can ever meet that expectation. It's just it's completely unrealistic. It's completely ridiculous to believe that they ever could do that. Now, I think now that you have players like Lacazette and Aubameyang who are probably going to score you 20-plus goals a year as long as they stay fit. You've got Mkhitaryan who's probably going to get you 10 goals and 10 assists in a year. You've got the improving, hopefully, versions of Welbeck who should get you 10 goals.
Welbeck will always get you 10 goals. I mean, if you get 10 goals from Welbeck, you're laughing.
Yeah, absolutely. Iwobi might get you 5 goals. Ramsey should chip in. Maybe even Wiltshire begins to chip in. Suddenly, the pressure is taken off Ozil, and now what you want to see is those 7 to 10 games where he plays well for all of them, rather than playing really well for 3 and then average for the other 6 or 7. You want these long periods where he's just, like De Bruyne's been all year, where he's just consistently very, very good. And he might only be excellent here and there, but he's very good all the time.
I mean, you also made the point about De Bruyne there. You want it to be in the big games as well.
Yeah.
But that's partly one of the reasons why I suggested signing someone to partner Granit Xhaka, because Granit Xhaka is so creative. In a more creative role, if you will, I think we would get even better Granit Xhaka, because I think he's improved. I think he's been one of the bright spots of the past few months. I think he's actually been really, really solid. So it's a case of, you mentioned a few years back then we had Cazorla and Alexis Sanchez. So we had all the creativity, but we had a stationary figure in Giroud, and we had one midfield runner in terms of, or two at max in either Walcott or Ramsey. very rarely did we actually play anything in behind, whereas now we have that capability. But we're also capable now of doing it the Giroud way, if you will, also. But I'm actually very much looking forward to this summer because there are plenty of possibilities. And I think if we get it right, Wenger said recently that we need two or three signings. And I can't say that I disagree with him. I think we need more than that, but I don't think we're 5, 6, 7 away. I think if you get a couple of good players, I think we're in with a good shout of... I don't think the title is within reach next season. I think top four, fine. I think you go and challenge for that again. But again, let us dream for a bit. Why not go for the title?
Yeah, I think... I mean, we can move on to the summer. I think the 2-3 kind of quote, the 2-3 players quote that Wenger gave out, I think if everything goes right with the current players that are in the squad, then yes, Arsenal are 2 or 3 players away. So let's say that Chambers partners Mustafi and Chambers develops into the top player that the best version of Chambers could be, perhaps, is. Let's say Bellerin, ideal scenario, rediscovers his best form. Let's say that Arsenal sign a left-back who's truly world-class and Monreal becomes your reserve. Let's say Arsenal sign a N'Golo Kante-esque defensive midfielder who can completely revolutionise the team. Let's say Mesut Ozil plays consistently at his best. Let's say Aubameyang and Lacazette stay fit. Let's say Wilshere stays fit and reaches his potential. The same can be said for Ramsey. The same can be said for Welbeck. And the same can be said for Iwobi. Then yes, Arsenal are 2 or 3 players away from winning the title. But that is a lot of ifs. It's a lot of ifs.
And I'll agree with that. For me, the priorities heading into this summer are a holding midfielder, a goalkeeper...
Yeah, possibly
in this order, whilst I'm thinking it off the top of my head as well. Certainly a holding midfielder, a goalkeeper. I think Ospina we need to say goodbye to. As I've already said, I think someone to partner Granit Xhaka would be fantastic. I think, as I've said also earlier, I think Iwobi's going to transition into a more of a midfielder. He actually reminds me in a very weird way, or I think... he could develop into an Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain Liverpool kind of midfielder. Not as dynamic in terms of being able to attack space, but I've said it numerous times as well, I think he's a superior technician on the ball.
Yep.
I think we need another winger.
A proper winger as well.
A proper winger, maybe even two. But then again, you come back to the argument that we had a few months back in terms of, do you hinder development or do you prioritise success? Yeah. We have Reece Nelson, of course, and then Emile Smith-Rowe's been doing very well, but supposedly he's more of a central player as well.
Yeah, no, he is.
So again, it's very difficult. We've got Kolasinac, Monreal. If we signed a left back, I wouldn't have any objections, but if we didn't, I also would be okay with it because I'm happy with those two. I think Ainsley Maitland-Niles is going to have to make do at playing right back or left back for at least the next year or so, because I think we'll have so many options in that midfield.
No, I agree. On left
it's,
back.
It's weird. It's exciting, though, because you're trying to predict the future and it's so uncertain, especially with the manager still to come in as well.
On the left back position, I think it's a difficult one. I don't think Kolasinac is good enough, full stop. He doesn't know what to do when he's defending. I think if you put him at wing back and you play a back three, I think he's fine because he gets forward excellently. But positionally, defensively, he's really poor. I've kind of had this theory for a few months, and I've not been brave enough to ever say it. So I was like, I'll just watch him for a few games, and watch him specifically, and he just doesn't know what to do defensively. He's coming inside when he should stay out wide. He chases the ball is his worst.
When he gives the ball away, he'll chase the ball rather than enter the space.
He consistently stands 2 yards behind his centre half, which is absolutely criminal. I mean, I learnt that at 6. If you're playing at fullback, don't stand behind your centre-half. Your centre-half sets your offside line. That's simple football, that is. His agility one-on-one is really
his ability
poor.
To turn, his turning circle, yeah, I would agree.
His turning circle, like his
the Bernardo Silva goal
spaces.
Was what really highlighted that for me.
Yeah, and there were a couple of moments last night when Mahrez, who again is that kind of shifty player who can move from side to side very quickly, caused him a little bit of grief when he was able to stand him up and then dart left or right. So essentially, I don't think Glasnac's good enough, and I think Monreal's now too old. Having said that,
I can see that.
Left back is not nearly one of Arsenal's biggest problems.
No, I'd agree with that also.
So if they didn't spend there, I wouldn't be disappointed, even with my reservations of the two players that they have there. So holding midfield, I think we both agree, is by far and away the biggest need.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if Arsenal signed two holding midfielders, I wouldn't be sad.
No, like, I mean, that's how big the problem remains that we could lose Aaron Ramsey this summer.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds as if Wilshere is going to sign a new contract, so I'll go on the assumption that he stays. But still, if we're not going to have Aaron Ramsey, and I'm not sure what formation Allegri plays. Does he play with three at the back?
He varies. He primarily four, but he does play with the three.
Interesting. Because going back to the point you made about Kolasinac, if we were to play a three or a five, I think he'd be perfect on the left wing, as you said.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Whereas if we were actually to play a five, I don't actually like the idea of playing Bellerin as that right hand, as the right wing back. I don't think he is... This sounds a bit harsh, but I'm struggling to convey this opinion. I don't think he's good enough going forward in order to provide the width. He's hardly Kyle Walker. I mean, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was fantastic in that role for us because he received the ball deep. But not only that, I've said this numerous times, he's one of the best players I've ever seen at taking on an opposition defender one-on-one or attacking space one-on-one. He was perfect for our system as a right wing back at the time. I don't think Bellerin is. I think his crossing has been proven to be poor and just seems to lack confidence whenever he's in the final third. Not only to beat a man, I mean, we hear how fast he is. I mean, we see
it going rarely,
from a defensive
perspective. You very rarely see him just knock the ball past the defender and fly by him, do you?
But I'm saying that now, as I'm saying that, it's again me thinking that's really because of how we play. Very rarely do we play counter-attacking football. It's usually very methodical. So by that time, he's probably got two guys in front of him because, as I said, Ozil drifts inside, Mkhitaryan drifts inside. So that's possibly a byproduct of that. But still, it's a case for me of if you have a fullback like that, at least nowadays, my perfect fullback is someone who is willing to head to the byline and whip a cross in.
Yeah.
Because it again, it just adds another wrinkle to your attack. So if he can work on that over the summer, I would be overjoyed. But right now, I mean, he would be serviceable there, yes, but I much prefer Kolasinac as a wingback than I do Bellerin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you, whoever the new manager is, and obviously we don't know who that is, it looks like, I have a feeling it will be Allegri or Arteta. That just kind of from reading the tea leaves a little bit, it feels like it's going to be one of those two. If Arsenal do end up playing three at the back, or say they switch between a back three and a back four, I think they need to buy another centre-half. And to be honest, even if they stay at a back four, they probably need to buy another centre-half.
Possibly. So who have they got? They've got Koscielny's out until December. Mustafi might not be going to the World Cup because Arsenal are also very weird. I mean, again, I don't know whether they'll be weird this summer because it's not Wenger who might not... The new manager might not give them a prolonged rest. So you'll have Mustafi, Chambers, Holding. Mavropanos is likely to be in that fold now. In a back three, Monreal's played in the back three before and he's actually looked very good in the back three. So again, that would go back to your point of bringing in another left back because that could help in that regard as well. Possibly.
But again,
it goes back to the case of success versus development. You pick your poison.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think if Arsenal have title hopes, which they do, publicly they say they have title hopes. Whether their actions actually support that notion or not,
whether their finances can support that notion,
but at least their public stance is we want to challenge for a title. I think if that's the case, they need to buy another centre-half. Mustafi cannot be the most experienced and best centre-half in the squad. He's just not good enough.
I guess I'm a romantic in terms of the fact that I like the idea of bringing through young players, but I can certainly...
No, I do too.
It's difficult only because we saw the promise that Callum Chambers had when he first arrived. When Rob Holding played last season, Mavropanos, for the past couple of games, you just see that sometimes and you think, okay, you've played well, here's your chance, and I can't see a better opportunity. You and I have said this before. If it's not next season for those guys, theoretically, when is it going to be?
No, I agree. And I wouldn't be against thrusting them into the lineup and see what they're doing. I just think playing your probabilities, you need to go and sign a top quality centre half. Now, what I'm not saying is go and buy another Mustafi for 20 million, 25 million, or go and buy even when Arsenal signed Lauren Koscielny in, what was it, 2010, 2009, even something like that, for kind of 10 million quid, who's another developmental, prospect. Nobody really knows who he is, kind of centre half. Even a Per Mertesacker, who when they signed him was a good German international centre-half, but he was by no means considered world-class. He was considered a good player, but not the top tier. I'm not saying that Arsenal should go and sign one of those players, because they probably got them already, in assuming Chambers and Mavropanos and Holding take the steps of their development that is anticipated. What they need is a truly world-class centre-half, like, say, Liverpool signing Virgil van Dijk in January, where he's not just a marginal step up from what they have. There's a significant difference between him and what they have in the squad. Look at Spurs and when they have Toby Alderweireld in the team and when they don't have him in the team. Having that centre-half who is really a massive... There's not a little bit of difference between him and Holding. There's no point in bringing him in if that's the case. But if you can find a centre-half, even if he costs 50, 60 million pounds, but is a major, major upgrade on what you have, I think you have to pull the trigger on that.
I would agree, even if
it stunts the development.
I mean, I agree with that, but I can't see it happening this summer, only because it's the case of we're not playing Champions League football. And also, if the budget rumours are to be believed, then we're not going to spend all that money on one player. I mean, what I should say is that we have no idea about the budget whatsoever. I mean, it could be absolutely ludicrous. But
put it this way, Arsenal have only ever spent in a window more than £100 million once. So if they even have £100 million to spend without sales, I wonder
how much they have, because they've made a lot of money recently in terms of they sold Sanchez, although that was a player swap, really, wasn't it?
They actually, if you take last summer and January, in terms of just net profit, which is a little bit of a dodgy stat, but it does kind of provide you a little bit, they've actually made a profit.
Yeah. And which, I assume which, that they'll be ridiculous. Selling... They're going to be selling a lot of players, I assume, this summer. Lucas Perra... Well, actually, again, that's difficult to say, because a new manager is probably going to want to see all of these players. But theoretically, you could say, right, Carl Jenkinson, probably going to go, couple of million. David Ospina, probably going to go, couple of million. Again, you're just looking at a lot of players who are... I mean, whether they offer Santi Cazorla a new contract, I think they should. One-year flyer, why not? We know his ability. But then we have so many players who are likely to go out on loan as well, and we've seen how beneficial that can be in the case of Chelsea. There are many ways a club can make money, and obviously Arsenal do a very good / bad job of doing it from a marketing perspective. Good from a marketing perspective, but poor from a fans' price perspective, if you will. So they should hardly be in financial trouble in terms of a transfer kitty, because they are so profitable as an organisation. But then again, Kroenke's trying to fund the Los Angeles Rams, and he obviously is using Arsenal for the most part as a money maker rather than his hobby, if you will.
I put it this way: the next 5 years will be fascinating to see how much money Arsenal spend, and to see how how protective Wenger was of the board in terms of just taking all the flack from the media and from the fans. And
his autobiography is something I'm already looking forward to.
Yeah.
If he ever writes one, I'm going to buy it so quickly.
Yeah, me too. I just wonder how good a job he did in from the board's perspective in protecting them, because they said, we're not giving you this money because it's going in our back pockets. And Wenger didn't challenge that. Wenger said, well, I'll work with what I've got, and did a very good job in working with what he's got. Mm. And I think over the next 5 years or so, we'll get our answer to that question. And it will be a very, very interesting answer indeed.
I think Arsenal fans are beginning to get to that point of, we've heard what the board has said now for a few years. They will no longer have Wenger's guile and authority, if you will, to hide behind. They will have someone who doesn't really want to, I presume, someone who doesn't want to throw themselves in front of the fans and act as a barrier between them and the board. He's probably going to want to ease in slowly. I mean, again, I'm assuming here, but that's how I would perceive it. If they don't spend, the hostility, if you will, might only get worse. And the thing is, for me, everyone's saying we should give the guy 3 years, the new manager, regardless of who he is. To some extent, I agree, but then to another extent, if we're mid-table next season, 2 years I'm willing to give, 3 years a push for me, personally. Some would argue, what's the difference? But it's tough, it's very nerve-wracking, it's very exciting. But I just want it all to be over. I want it to be August already, and I want us to lose to a Jesse Rodriguez goal at Stoke. Wait, that's impossible now. That's impossible, sorry.
Stoke are gone. That's a very good thing that's happened over the last few weeks. We're ending just a second. I've got two more questions to ask you, and then we'll finish.
Go on, then.
Firstly, who do you think the manager will be? And secondly, how much do you think Arsenal will net spend in the summer?
Net spend in the summer? I think it will be Allegri, judging, again, by the reports that I've seen. I mean, I don't have a preference of reporter. It's just kind of a cumulative thing. From the perspective, I don't think we'll make a profit this summer. I think we'll be... Is it in the red or in the black if it's in the negative?
The red. If you spend more, it's in the red.
I think we'll be in the red simply because, as I referred to moments ago, if we sell players, I think we could sell a lot of players, but for small prices. Whereas if we buy someone, as in a holding midfielder who's going to start, you're looking at probably the best part of 30, 40 million. A winger, probably around about that same price range as well. And a centre-back, depending on what kind of player you get. And a new goalkeeper, I mean, depends again who they go for, but you're looking at 30 million is around the going rate for any player of quality. Yeah, nowadays. Yeah. So you're looking at their 90 million. I can't see us selling 90 million worth of players.
I'll push on answer and then I'll give you my answer. What's the net spend?
Oh,
give us a number.
Crikey. I'd say 40, between 40 and 50. Personally, for me, or that's what I'd like to see.
What do you think we all see?
Oh, crikey.
I'm going to push you. Give me a number.
50. 50.
50.
50.
Okay. I do think at some point this summer, well, before the summer, we'll all sit down. We'll all write down all the players who we think are going to leave and for what price. And we'll all write down the players that we think are going to sign and for what price. And then we'll come back to it at the end of the summer and see how accurate we are.
But the thing is, it's really weird. Even if you look at Jack Butland or Alfie Mawson, they're probably going to command the best part of £25 million. And they're going to be playing for championship teams now. I mean, I know Swansea aren't officially relegated, but they're as good as
gone.
They
will be. Yeah, they will
be. So
I think I think I agree on Allegri. I think it will be Allegri. But there's a chance it could be Arteta.
I would be disappointed if it's Arteta.
I have a feeling the board has split. And some of them want Allegri and some of them want Arteta. I don't think it'll be Vieira anymore, but that's just a hunch. I really hope it won't be Ancelotti. My big fear is that they go for Allegri. He says no, stays at Juventus, and then as a backup, Arsenal go and get Ancelotti. That's kind of my real big worry that in 2 weeks' time.
Get the worry, Andy. What's the number? I'm pushing you for a number now.
For the number, I'll give you a number. So you said you can't see Arsenal selling £90 million a player. I agree, nearly.
The only player who could go, who could theoretically command a big fee, is Aaron Ramsey for me.
Yeah,
and possibly Mustafi, because there were rumblings of him last season, or Bellerin. But I don't see all of them leaving. So
Ramsey could very easily leave, and if he does leave, it will be for at least £30 million. He's got a year left
more
on his contract. Than
that. He's only got a year left. 30, 40, maybe
40 million, something like that. I mean, Chamberlain had a year left on his contract last year. You got 35 for him. I think you're probably looking around the 35 to 40 million mark, something like that.
Yeah.
I think Lacazette could be sold.
I don't see it. I mean, you look at the Burnley game. I really liked how we deployed Aubameyang on the wing and Lacazette through the middle. It might mean that Mkhitaryan misses out, but I think that's how you're going to play it. I mean, they're going to get you your goals, and I value goals over assists. And I think Wenger's shown that he can play the two of them together. Sorry, but I don't want to entertain the thought.
I agree, but the new manager may... just put it this way. It wouldn't surprise me if the new manager says to Lacazette, you're going to be our Europa League striker and Aubameyang is going to be our Premier League striker. I don't care what I've seen Arsenal do for the last few weeks or months.
You're using my arguments against me now.
The new manager will say to Lacazette, Aubameyang's my striker. And Lacazette, like Giroud a year ago, says, well, thank you, but no thank you. I'd like to leave. I'm not saying it will happen. I don't think it will happen. But just don't be surprised if whoever comes in says, Aubameyang, you're my centre-forward, and Lacazette, you're my second striker.
If the manager has any kind of wits about him, he would deal with that professionally, in terms of the fact, oh my goodness, I've got two guys here who could score 20-plus goals a season. Let's keep them both happy.
I'm not saying I would do it.
I agree. I mean, I hope that he goes in with that attitude rather than the one that you just presented.
Absolutely. So if Arsenal sell Ramsey, which is possible, if they sell Lacazette as well, plus, you know, the other bits and bobs that you've kind of laid out, it wouldn't surprise me if they got £100 million worth of sales.
Mm-hmm.
Which would, for me, put a net spend of about zero. Now, I don't actually think they're going to sell Lacazette. And I actually don't think they're going to sell Ramsey either. I think they're going to sign Ramsey to a new contract.
Me too.
And I think they'll spend about... I'm going to be ambitious. I think they'll spend £65 million.
That's the ballpark that I'm thinking
net,
of.
Net spend.
Because, again, I'm not sure who they're targeting. Again, it's one of those things I'm looking forward to doing when I've finished school, is to just binge watching player highlights and game highlights and matches like Arsene Wenger does religiously, just so I can identify players and kind of...
I think they're going to sign a goalkeeper. I think they're going to sign a centre midfielder. And yes. I think they might sign a centre-half as well.
I agree on the goalkeeper and the midfielder. Centre half, I'm not so sure about, but I can certainly see it.
Well, I guess time will tell.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it.
I guess time.
I'm
will
looking
tell.
Forward to all those awful rumours.
Oh God, yeah, I'm gonna.
Mustafi's leaving. I know Bellerin's leaving.
And then the World
leaving.
Cup.
Oxlade-Chamberlain's
the World Cup only
a new
adds
deal.
To it, doesn't
now
it?
Now he's not signing a new deal.
Look at this Albanian midfielder who's just been brilliant in the World Cup game against, I don't know, Turkey or something. Like, oh gosh.
Oh, that's going to represent a few interesting bargains as well.
Yep.
That'll be interesting.
It I do think Arsenal might actually be quite decisive, especially in hiring a manager, just because if you wait till after the World Cup doesn't finish till...
Well, the transfer market closes before the season next season as well, so...
Yeah, exactly. And the World Cup doesn't finish till mid-July. So you've basically got a month post-World Cup to sign your players and get ready for the new season, which is not long at all. Plus, you've got a pre-season tour in the middle of all that. So, really, Arsenal need to be by the end of...
They need to have the deals in place. If the players are at the World Cup, they simply need to have the deals in place and whatnot. I mean, they might be able to mid-June, get them whilst they're there. But
by mid-June, you need to have a manager in place and you need to know what, really, within reason, what players you're going to go after. We will see what Arsenal do.
Oh, I'm so excited.
We wanted to give you a kind of rough overview of the last couple of weeks just because, you know, we couldn't record one last
time. And it turned into a transfer special.
Yeah. Has been a while since we've spoken to you.
That's us, though. We're looking forward.
We are. We plough on relentlessly-ish. We will have a big-time season review for you early next week. Josh will hopefully be joining us there as well.
Oh, I can't wait to have his optimism back and how we're going to have a leg and it's all going to be smooth sailing.
There's no way that Josh doesn't think we can't win the league next year.
He was probably like you when Wenger announced he was resigning. We're going to win it all, everything.
Yeah, invincible, here we go. So thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Twitter, on Facebook, just Google us, Pain in the Arsenal. You will hear us next week. And hopefully it will be finally having had an away point in 2018. Goodbye.